Today on the DML News Podcast, Donald J. Trump continues to defend himself, although gagged by the radical judge in New York. We'll discuss. Also, Trump's boys taking an active role in vetting who can be trusted and who cannot. Then, of course, we've got the maniacs who are taking over colleges in the name of terrorists. And we've got some videos to show you how one community continues to fall apart and everybody pretends like it's not. So get ready. I'm with Ryan today, and it's all unfiltered.
Dennis Michael Lynch gives you his word, and he will never let you down. He will always fight for America.
The only one who really puts his money where his mouth is Dennis Michael Lynch.
Hello, I'm Dennis Michael Lynch, and I thank you for joining me today. Denny has the day off. Ryan is going to be filling in terms of some of the commentary here. We are going to have a good show for you, as always. We're going to start off with Donald J. Trump. So Mr. National Enquirer is being, let's call it, interviewed by the prosecution. He's being dragged into a situation where New York liberals are trying to take down Donald J. Trump. And basically, there's a thing called a catch and a kill. So Mr. Trump, before he was the president, when he was going to start running his campaign, he was warned by the National Enquirer that, listen, there are a lot of women that you dated. You used to be a big-time bachelor. And there may be women who are going to come out of the woodwork in trying to make life very difficult for you, especially ones that are of the liberal persuasion. So the whole idea of catching and killing a story is nothing new. This is an age-old thing. And let me kind of just explain again in case you're somewhat distant from this part of things. Let's say, for instance, that I'll use my good buddy and son, Ryan. Let's say, for instance, that Ryan and I went on a extravaganza, sort of a wild, wild weekend. We went to Las Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And Ryan and I do things that I wish we didn't do. But we agree that we're going to keep it to ourselves and we're never going to reveal it. Well, Ryan and I have a falling out, and he turns out to be a massive liberal. And when I go to run for president in 2028, he decides that he's going to do a tell-all. So I talk to my friend at the National Enquirer and say, listen, why don't you go to Ryan Lynch and contractually get him to sign his name that he is going to sell you the exclusive rights to his story about what happened in Las Vegas. Now, my fear is that Ryan is going to exaggerate or go far beyond the realms of truth to basically further intensify the story, to further capture the audience and their need to know what happened. What kind of horrible, crazy, wild things did the candidate Dennis Michael Lynch possibly do? We don't want those stories out there. Maybe Ryan and I had a silly one-nighter where we had too many tequila shots and we did something crazy, like walk down the street naked. I have no idea. I'm making things up. But Ryan is going to take this to the next level. And that's what my fear is, because he has shown that he cannot be trusted. All right. So what happens is the National Enquirer goes into Ryan and says, hey, Ryan, guess what, man? We will buy your story, the exclusive rights for it, for $200,000, so $130,000, whatever the dollar amount is we want to use. And Ryan's like, really? He says, yep, here's the thing. You can never talk about it to anybody. You can never share it with anybody. You can't write a book. You can't write an article. You can't do a blog post. You can't do an interview. You can't do anything. You need to shut up forever. We have the exclusive on this. And Ryan says, okay. And he takes the $200,000. And now the National Enquirer comes back to me and says, hey, Mr. Lynch, by the way, we got Ryan not to say anything. 200 grand. Okay, so be it. And now the National Enquirer kills the story. They never write it. They do nothing with it. They own the exclusive rights. They don't have to print anything. And that basically is not a crime. That has been going on forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. It's not a crime. And yet the liberals here are trying to take the National Enquirer, put them up on the stand and say, this is nefarious. This is criminal activity. And it just is not the case. We have ourselves a pretty interesting dilemma going on here. Dennis yesterday in the podcast had asked me a question, and I never did, in fact, answer it. I went off on a tangent on something else about a newsletter we're starting, and we will get to that in a minute. But he asked me whether or not it would have been a good idea for Donald J. Trump to pick his vice president, the running mate, earlier on. So this way, while Trump is locked up in a courtroom, that running mate would be able to go out and, you know, spread the Make America Great Again message. Before I get into my analysis of this, I'm going to ask Ryan. I'm going to bring Ryan in here for a second. Ryan, we have spoke many different times about who it is that we think would be a good candidate for Trump to bring in on the trail. When you speak with Denny, when you speak with your other buddies who are your age, when you're speaking in general, I mean, this weekend you just had a whole thing with friends. You guys all went out for the weekend. If you do bring up politics, who usually is mentioned about being a good running mate for Donald J. Trump with the younger generation that you're involved with?
I think the problem now is that the younger generation they don't have an insight or that good of an insight, so they wouldn't really give me a good answer, but I can give you my answer.
Go ahead.
Which I know we've talked about multiple times, but whenever I talk to my friends, I mean, I'd say there's probably 1 out of 10 that actually understands why someone would be a good pick or not.
Okay.
But for Trump's situation, I think Kristi Noem, which we talk about because he got slaughtered in the suburban white woman area in 2020. And then obviously I think DeSantis would be great because he's a great policymaker. But I mean, I think the tension between those two are still pretty high, and I don't think it's going to be healed anytime soon.
It won't be. And so I'm happy you picked those two names because those are the two names that I would pick. Both of them come over the very, very strategic level of selection, if you will. With DeSantis, I think you're getting the best governor that has ever been in the United States since I've been alive. You get a guy who knows how to get the trains in and out on time, maybe not as charisma filled as Trump, but you only need one Trump. You don't need two. And I think that DeSantis would be a great guy for doing the blocking and tackling. And in politics, although sometimes things get dirty, there's always a way of kissing and making up, especially if you both get what it is that you want. With Kristi Noem, to your point, Trump did take a beating with especially the single suburban woman who didn't like the way in which Trump spoke about women. Probably don't like the idea that Trump gave hush money or is accused of giving hush money to Stormy Daniels, a porn star of all. So he's hurting in this area. And you can make an argument that Kristi Noem, who is, you know, vibrant and highly conservative and lives in a conservative state and is the governor of that state, is extremely attractive. And whether we like to admit it or not, attractive people attract people. And so both of them, DeSantis and Noem, would both be firecrackers for Trump and be great. But here's why he's not going to pick either one of them. Not yet, anyway. Right now, Trump needs the cameras and the attention to be focused on him. And I mean that. It would be horrible for him to pick a vice presidential candidate because what will happen is the media will start to turn into a jury itself. It will start to say that Trump is going to go to jail. I just read an op-ed this morning. It was on The Hill, and they were talking about how this is such unprecedented activity that's going on right now, and that we all must face the reality that for the first time, a former president may actually go to prison. Go to prison. For what? For what? There's nothing to this case except for one major, huge thing. It's being run. It's being judged. It's going to be juried by far-left liberals. And that there alone is the scariest thing of all. This is not one of those O.J. Simpson trials where you say, hey, you know, if they could just find the murder weapon, things would be over. There is no murder weapon here. There was no crime. There's no victim. There is no victim. There never is a victim. And yet they always go after Trump as if he is the criminal. So the reason why Trump can't pick a vice presidential candidate is because it would take the focus off him. And right now, we need Donald J. Trump to be the focus. Now, I'm going to take a second here before we go into some of the other things that we want to talk about today. And I'm going to explain something that we're going to be doing. We had a family meeting yesterday. It was a business meeting. It wasn't anything about family. And we decided that we are going to attempt to create the single largest, most significant, conservative-based newsletter that the United States has ever seen. And we are starting this with the target of launching it on May 1. I will keep the name of the newsletter and the name of the website that will be powering it to myself until the very end. So this way, none of the crazy lefties can try to get in and disrupt it. But this newsletter is going to have multi-purposes, but its greatest purpose for the next 6 months is to provide people like you multiple different content-based weaponry. How does that sound? In the sense that Donald J. Trump is locked up in a courtroom right now. He can't campaign. The media is laser-like focused on everything in this trial. They're looking backward. We hear words of porn star, corruption, hush money. These are all ugly terms that the prosecutors are using, even though they know that there is no corruption, because corruption is never listed once in the indictment. There is nothing criminal here. This is just a ploy to try to bring down Donald J. Trump, to make him finally guilty in front of a jury pool that is far left, reading the New York Times, wants nothing to do with Trump. So what we need to do is we need to, on a daily basis, be reminding people what the media will not. And that is what Trump did for this country in the 4 years he was there. What Trump will do for this country in the next 4 years when he gets back into office, and how it compares to what it is that Joe Biden has done for this country. Nobody is ever focusing in on the facts and the numbers and the truths. So our newsletter will be by and large an opportunity for you and all readers who get it to not only absorb these facts and the information that we need to know that Trump should be on the campaign trail pushing right now, but isn't, because this is what the left is doing to him. It gives you the ability to have that knowledge for yourself. And of course, it's going to be created in a very shareable way. If you are Facebook, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts, and you are listening to me right now, and you're like, I love that idea, because I did a Facebook Live last night and I talked about it and people loved it. And I went into greater detail, and I will get into greater detail when we launch it in a week and a half from now. But if you are one of those people on social media who are listening right now, please do me a favor. You do yourself a favor. You could do one or two different things. Number one, you could download the DML News app for free from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, turn the notifications on, and trust me when I tell you, that app will tell you when the newsletter is ready and how it is that you could be a part of it. Number two is if you leave a comment here on the video, we will be responding to all the comments with the link to where you could register. Your email and your cell phone number will not be sold. It will not be rented. We will keep that information for ourselves. You don't have to give your cell phone number. The problem with the email is that obviously Gmail and other liberal leaning email services may actually put us in your spam. We are going to try to protect against that as much as we can. But I repeat, we are launching a newsletter that is going to act like a campaign arm for Donald J. Trump, because nobody right now is doing it for him. It would be the natural fit would have a vice presidential candidate doing for him, but the media will turn it so this way that vice presidential candidate takes all the thunder away from Trump and wound up being anointed as the candidate. We don't need that for Trump. Trump doesn't need that. And that kind of pressure shouldn't be put on a vice presidential candidate. So if that is something that's appetizing to you to be part of and to try to help Trump in his campaign, I just gave you what's going to be launching on May 1. So please, if you don't have the DML News app, download it now. Ryan, there's a whole story here about how it is that Don Jr. and Eric are going to now be sort of the loyalty czars. This is out of Axios, far left Axios, where Don Jr. Is going to take an active role, so too is Eric, in vetting every single person who would possibly be in the Trump administration at the top level, let's call it the executive team, and the underpinnings, the people who also play a very important role in his administration. I personally love this because there's one thing I could guarantee in this world, having two sons. My two sons are going to protect me like nobody else is. And so Don Jr. Has come a long way, as far as I'm concerned, in the sense that he's learned a lot of about politics. What scares me a little bit about Don Jr., and I'm a bigger fan of Eric, to be quite honest, Don Jr. has very, very bad choice in women, as far as I'm concerned. His fiance was once the wife of Gavin Newsom. So I don't know how well he's vetting his women. Hopefully he can vet his the Trump executive team a whole lot better. What do you think about having the sons involved in this?
I mean, if it was me and Denny instead of Eric and Don and you instead of Trump, you can't buy me and Denny out, and we would make sure that whoever came in wouldn't, you know, be a backstabber or someone that we could trust. So I think it's a great idea, just like how they put Laura Trump in the RNC. She went in there and she's starting to shake things up and get things to how they should be. So, I think Don and Eric would do the same thing.
You know, and there's criticism about this nepotism, they're saying, you know, and if you look back at the Trump administration the first time, he had Ivanka and he had Jared very involved. In fact, I think that was a massive, epic mistake because both of them are liberals. Jared is a major liberal. And so I think a lot of the mistakes that Trump did make along the way was due to listening to his daughter and, more importantly, his son-in-law. With this in mind, Eric and Don Jr. are completely conservative. We don't have to worry about any liberal leanings there. Where I wonder, with a little concern, is, you know, it's loyalty is very important. But so too is knowledge and experience. And you may have somebody who was not completely jumping up and down and doing, you know, tumbersaults because they were so excited about Trump the first time. You may have somebody who said a few bad things about Trump, like, nah, he wouldn't be good. I prefer to have Ted Cruz, or I prefer to have Marco Rubio, or I prefer to have, anybody else. And they came around, recognizing the fact that Trump was a lot better than they originally thought he would be. I would hope that somebody who has really, really great ideas and a great track record, who may not have been a huge Trump fan in the beginning, doesn't have an X against them because they haven't kissed the ring. That's the one thing that concerns me a little bit about having this sort of thing put into place, where it's going to be a loyalty vetting. Whether you're going to be loyalty. Is the loyalty to Trump, or is the loyalty to the United States of America and the concept of Make America Great Again?
That's a tough one. What do you like? I mean, I would hope it would be for America, not for Trump, but, you know, Trump does like when people kiss the finger, so, or kiss the ring.
Right. So what happens in that case is you may actually get somebody who's not right for the job and they wind up fumbling on themselves.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the strategy is, obviously, for Don Jr. and for Eric, but I love the fact of having them in there. It's a lot better than having some other person who's going to go in there and just think they're going to be, Mr. and Mrs. Expert on who's the best and who's not the best. There has to be, and I think there's enough people out there. I think there's enough talent out there. There has to be enough. In terms of vetting that is done from not only the practical standpoint that I mentioned about, like, hey, let's use Ted Cruz. Okay. I think Ted Cruz would be a great pick for attorney general. He has shown time and again that he's highly conservative. He has shown time again that he takes no BS from the left. And, you know, he comes from the great state of Texas. Now, you can take a vetting to him from a conservative level and say he's one of the most conservative guys you're going to find on the right. Okay, great. But then when you look at the loyalty factor, he would be eliminated from the job because he hasn't been loyal to Trump. He actually said some of the most vile things about Trump because vile things were said about him and his wife by Trump. So do the boys pass that sort of thing over and focus in on the loyalty that Cruz has given to conservatism? And I think if they do that, that's how they'll pick the best people versus just somebody who may have always been an ass kisser to Donald J. Trump and may not have the same unique abilities that Ted Cruz does when it comes to being an attorney general, especially somebody who has, because Cruz has made arguments in front of the Supreme Court before. So he is not only a sharp lawyer, but he is also a sharp conservative. And that's what I would hope. I'll give you the last word on that before we move on.
I would hope as well, too. But I think Trump, I think if Cruz, it would have to be Cruz that goes to Trump and, like you said, kiss the ring. And I feel like if he leaves it to Don and Eric, I mean, it's going to be Trump at the end of the day that has to say, they'll be like, oh, we want Cruz. But if Trump doesn't want him, he's going to say no.
Yeah. I mean, look, you can say the same thing about Ron DeSantis, right? So if you got Ron DeSantis, I think Ron DeSantis is the better choice between him and Noam, simply because although Kristi Noem is good in her own right, she's the leader of a very small, almost insignificant state. When you look at Florida and DeSantis, we are leading in so many different categories. We are a humongous state, one of the biggest, maybe the most important in election time. And when you look at what DeSantis has done over his course of time, he has always stayed true to conservatism. He hasn't always kissed the ring by any means whatsoever, but he is a proven winner. And the only time he's ever lost in any sort of bid for office is his run for the presidency.
Yeah.
Now, you can make an argument. He didn't lose because he never was the candidate. So his record still is, I've never lost in an election. But his exploration of being president obviously didn't pan out like he wanted it to be. So he dropped out. With that said, trust me when I tell you that Ron DeSantis is sitting in the background right now waiting to see if Trump does indeed get imprisoned for what's going on here. Because I don't know what the Republican Party is going to do, what the RNC is going to do if Trump is actually sentenced to prison, which is very highly likely because of what's happening in New York with these radicals. You're going to have an innocent man be put behind bars or locked up in some sort of, house arrest. And there is going to be call by a large amount of people that are going to say, we need somebody else. And so I think Ron DeSantis is sitting in the background waiting to see whether or not his card is called. But more importantly, DeSantis would fail on the loyalty test per Don Jr. and Eric Trump, but he would be the best choice to be a vice presidential candidate because of his track record, his love for America, and whether people want to recognize it or not, in many ways, DeSantis and Trump are cut from the same cloth when it comes to conservatism and fighting for what they believe is true in the United States. Last word on that with DeSantis to you, and then we're going to move on to something else. Yeah.
DeSantis and Trump, I'd say the only difference is the personality. Everything else is, you know, parallel. So back to the vice president thing, with DeSantis being the VP, I would rather have DeSantis be the VP than, you know, for Trump to go to jail and DeSantis swoop in and be the candidate. I mean, I don't want to see Trump in jail, but I like the idea of him running with Trump. So in 2028, he could say, I've been in the White House for 4 years, and then he can run.
If he got reelected, yeah, that would be 12 years of having highly conservative leadership. And I think this country would turn around in such a way that you would say, Biden who? Biden what?
I think if Trump can get over that beef that they have together,
yeah,
it would add to his legacy if he put him under VP.
Oh, one thing about Trump that you can't deny is that at the end of the day, Trump wants victory. He wants victory at all costs. And if Ron DeSantis is a pathway to victory for him, he will look right past anything that DeSantis ever said or didn't say that he would have liked, such as giving him an endorsement. Trust me, Trump wants to win, and he will win at all costs. That being said, there is a demographic that is losing, and it's losing hard in the current status of this nation. Everything is impossibly expensive. In fact, last night, after our meeting, Ryan, myself, his sister Ashley, and Mary, we went out to get something to eat to further our conversation about our newsletter. And as we were sitting there, we were talking about how hard it is for a youngster to buy a home. I bought my first home when I was 25 years old. And I believe I bought that house. I believe I bought that house for $175,000. I needed 20% down in order to get a mortgage. That equaled out to about $35,000. That is obtainable. That is obtainable. Today, they still want you to have 20% down. But the average home right now is $420,000 in the United States, and it doesn't get you a whole lot. So now that 20% represents that you need to have $85,000 just for a down payment. Forget about your closing costs. Forget about buying furniture for the house. Forget about doing anything else, moving in, having food, anything. What 25-year-old do you know that has $82,000 just sitting around saying, hey, let me go find a house? So although the pricing mechanism for a house, the pricing structure for buying a house has gone up significantly, that 20% number has remained same. And 20% of 420 is a lot different than 20% of 175. So we were speaking about how difficult it is for youngsters today to feel as if there is opportunity in the United States for them. We're going to play a video right here that aired on MSNBC. I am shocked that they actually allowed this on MSNBC because it actually tells you how bad things are under the Obama 3.0, under the Obama-Biden administration, which really is what it is now. All right, Biden may be the spokesperson, if you want to call him that, but the person pulling the strings is Barack Obama. There's no doubt in my mind. We're going to play this from MSNBC. Then Ryan and I are going to have a conversation about the difficulties of our young people and what we have to do to try to bring them over to vote for Trump in 2024 and why this newsletter is so important. The other thing we're going to show you is that the maniacs have escaped the insane asylum. These pro-Palestinian people are out of their mind. They don't even know what they're doing. They're just taking over colleges, and people are allowing it to happen. We're going to give you videos that are going to blow your mind. We're going to give you the updates on what's happening in all these universities, and we're going to talk about how it is that this country right now is breeding idiots. But you can only be with us in that conversation if you come on over to Team DML, because I can't have it on Facebook, I can't have it on YouTube, and I certainly cannot have it on Apple Podcasts. So what you would do is you would download the DML News app. And then in tab 5, there's the interact tab. That goes to Team DML. We have thousands and thousands of members, all highly conservative, good people. We have a live chat. You can get this show full in video and in audio every single day. Every single day. So please, we can't survive without you. I mean, this newsletter we're talking about, it's going to cost me thousands of dollars every single month. And it's going to be completely free. I can't do it unless I can pull the money from somewhere else. And so I need Team DML members. You could become a member for as little as $2.50 a month, and you wind up helping us. The app is free. You'll get your news for free and everything else. But if you want to be engaged in this program every single day and the other programs we have as well, which we have other ones like the Wine and Talk and Ryan's Cafe, we got a lot of different stuff. Please download the DML News app and become a member of Team DML. Or you could also do it through your desktop. Go teamdml.com. All right, for those of you who are Team DML, we're going to be staying with you. For those of you who are not Team DML, we're going to play this video right here from MSNBC, and then we're going to say farewell to you, but Ryan and I are going to discuss it. All right, Ryan, let's play the video right now.
For the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. That is the social compact breaking down. People aged 30 to 34, 60% of them in 1990 had one child. Now it's 27%. People are opting out of America. They're not optimistic about it. They're not having kids. Young people aren't having sex. They're not meeting. They're not mating. The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day, which lessens household formation. So we have a real issue. Young people are enraged. So it turns every cut, every movement into an opportunistic infection because, quite frankly, they are just pissed off. Mm-hmm. They look up, they see wealth, exceptional wealth across my generation and people in certain industries, and they are really struggling. Their purchasing power is going down, and the incumbents create artificial scarcity on campus. We take pride in rejecting 90% of our applicants. So the incumbents who already have a degree see their degree go up in value. We get very concerned with housing and traffic once we own the housing. Housing permits are sequestered from young people. Housing prices have gone from 290 to 420 in the last 4 years. So a young person, a house, stocks that I don't own skyrocket in value. Let's have COVID relief and flush the markets and take assets way up because if a million people dying would be bad, would be tragic if I got less wealthy. And we're doing it on their credit card. Young people have every reason to be enraged and every issue they see, they look up, they get angry and they see someone doing better than them. And then every day it is speedballed in their face that they are failing, that they are not doing as well as everyone around them. We have lost the script. Our kids are more anxious and more depressed and more obese and more addicted. And we have made a purposeful decision to let this happen by ensuring the people around this table stay wealthy at the cost of young people. So